We're here. We're live. We're back again. The new Dynasty Points, formerly the Full Tilt Dynasty podcast, coming together at fantasypoints.com to be the leading provider for Dynasty video content here at Fantasy Points. If you have not listened to us before, we need to give you the reminder. We are not a news show. We are not a start or sit show. We have fun here, and you should too. If you've never watched a Full Tilt program, we've always known one thing for sure. This game can rip your heart out just when you think you have all of the answers. Well, we can tell you that we don't have all the answers. But what we do have is a very particular set of skills. Skills we've obtained over a long career. And with those skills, we will always try to provide you the most actionable and transparent advice possible. We know people make mistakes. We know people screw up in this game, and we will be the first ones to tell you if we have done that. You can definitely count on us holding ourselves accountable. Last week, the pimp daddy, Scott Barrett, the director of Dank Stats, joined us. Well, today it's special for a different reason. The man on the screen has not been on a Full Tilt or Dynasty Points program since the draft, and it's made us sad. Original member, original founder, one of the men that helped get this whole thing started. It's Big Billy. Very happy to have you back. Just an absolute genius and one of the most down-to-earth human beings I've ever met. Dave is hyped that you're back. We're all hyped that we're back. That you're back. Welcome back, man.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I wish I could have come back with more hair than I left with, but that's not how the world works. I gotta say, it was beautiful to hop on and see Dave in the chat immediately. God, I think that's DeParadox, ain't it?
It is. That is DeParadox.
Yeah. No, it's nice. It was very excited to hop on. If y'all can't tell, I moved in with my beautiful girlfriend. There's no longer a crappy apartment bed that came with the apartment behind me. We actually have furniture now. So,
oh my goodness.
I'm very excited to hop on and chat with y'all.
It's amazing. I'm so excited to get to Billy's Stat Corner, an original game debuted on this podcast that our other guests just fell in love with, and we did too. We've had a hard time finding a replacement for that. The ADP game is like pretty okay, but the Stat Corner is just it. So we're going to hit that after we get into the ranked conversation. We have a question here already from Hunter Stantine. He got this question in like way early. So he was in there this morning, 8:58 a.m. This question was in here. So I want to get to that before we do anything else, because that kind of question asking, that's got to be a numero uno. So obviously this is fresh off of last night's game and where he's feeling. I've made my opinions on QJ very, very well known that I would sell him for a half-eaten ham sandwich and a Diet Coke. So is it time to just sell Quentin Johnston for whatever you can get before he is Sky and J-Mo, or do you hold him and wait for the off-season hopium to raise his value a bit?
That's tough for J-Mo to just include him in the Sky territory. I don't know if I'm all the way there with J-Mo yet.
How could you not? Okay, sorry. J-Mo is toast. Donovan Peoples-Jones.
Like, Sky Moore is, like, droppable. Like, J-Mo is not droppable. If you threw him, he would drop him. Literally.
Sky Moore is dynasty waivers. J-Mo still has enough, like, J-Mo's redraft waivers, but he's not the dynasty waivers level
yet. And unfortunately, it's not even redraft waivers. I have this team, the main event team, that's the only team that we keep tweeting about because it's just been comical, that I'm co-managing with Liam Murphy and Ron Stewart. And we did like a pretty uncharacteristically early running back start where we took Pollard, Breece Hall, and Etienne in our first five rounds. And what it's resulted in is like over the last half of our draft, everyone was just like taking their own ceremonial wide receiver that sucks and will always suck, but like maybe this guy is upside. And we've been engaged in like a survivor, like vote out scheme over the past few weeks is we need things like backup quarterbacks or tight end twos or defenses, where we just keep having to cut our ceremonial wide receivers one by one. And Jameson has been a subject of discussion every week where I've wanted him cut since the moment we drafted his ass.
Yeah.
But so far he's been protected at a 2v1 vote from Ron and Liam. So he is not yet redraft droppable if you're on our team. We've sacrificed Rashad Bateman. We've sacrificed Treylon Burks. We've sacrificed Jonathan Mingo this week. It's just we're moving down the list. Tony has been sacrificed. Every shitty young wide receiver you can think of has been cut by this team or is still on this team.
J-Mo fits that, in my opinion. Like, I was never a big with him as a prospect. Didn't really care where he got drafted. When the best thing the coaching staff comes out and says is that we love his ability to help us in the run game, my red flag kind of goes up. And then they go and trade for Donovan Peoples-Jones, who's better at J-Mo's job than J-Mo is. The writing's on the wall, but this isn't about J-Mo. This is about Quentin Johnston, who I also view as kind of in that tier of you're definitely probably a bust, right? He's Treylon Burks 2.0 was my opinion of him pre-draft. And it's just being reaffirmed. And it was, well, maybe he just needs an injury. Oh, if Mike Williams didn't play. Okay. Well, Mike Williams went out for the year. Now, if Palmer could just, not be there, he would just get so many. It's not happening. And I don't really know why right now. But at this point, we're at week 10. I don't know if the breakout's coming. They've had the bye. Like, my red flags are way up.
I mean, at this point, I still think you're just holding because, I don't know, maybe at some point in time, I just keep having the same line about him. Maybe at some point in time, the Dynasty community will completely change and these like high-profile faceplants are just worth literally nothing in the offseason and they're untradeable. And, maybe that starts this year. I don't know. But generally speaking, especially prospects of Quentin Johnston's level of interest coming into the season and first round draft capital and all, like, they're just not usually at below round two pick trading value in the offseason. And I understand that if you have one QJ in one league, you might approach this differently. You might look at it and say, my league is extremely illiquid. But if we're talking about, players with between 2 and 5 QJs in 20 to 30 leagues, it's not as much of a concern of like, can I get to literally zero? It's like, maybe you move a couple. So all I would say is no one's paying a first for him today.
Right.
Probably no one's paying an early second for him today. What are you trading him for now in your league that you don't think you can get any one day in an 8-month off season? Like, I'm just not so sure that offer is out there where it's worth it to not just wait and see what happens without Josh Palmer and see if what I think is unlikely, which would be QJ being good, happens. I still think that there's more of a chance of that happening than that there's some great deal out there now that isn't going to be there in the offseason. I will note, like, he had a pretty reasonable game against Chicago in the Sunday night game. He had six targets, 5 catches, 50 yards. He was over 20% targets per route run. They finally started to use him on some like after the catch stuff, which is what he's actually good at. And their entire offense was non-functional this week. They had 136 passing yards against the Jets. So I don't know that like this game I would view him that differently. He actually led the entire team in routes. He ran 35 pass routes this week. So that's somewhat encouraging. I feel better about him now than I felt 2 weeks ago, if that helps.
Sure.
Yeah. And I do want to exercise. I hate coming back and immediately going back into character. There's a little bit of, we've seen guys like this before. Really early drafted guys who, sure, he's probably going to be a bust at that level you want an early drafted wide receiver to be. Like, I don't think in 5 years we're going to be looking at him as, this peak, awesome, top 12 dynasty wide receiver talent. But I think there's a completely valid chance that he moves into a role like a player like Corey Davis, who hangs around the league for years and puts up a couple, wide receiver seasons in the top 30. Like, he's a bust from the level of being that top talent, but I think in 5 years I don't think he's N'Keal Harry. I think we're going to have a couple fantasy viable seasons for him. So no, I think at this point, especially looking at guys like Corey Davis and Mike Williams, who did nothing their rookie year. Mike Williams didn't hit 100 yards his rookie year. Granted, other reasons for that. But like, there are these guys who will come back around and do something in the near future. And it's probably not going to be a wide receiver 5 season or a wide receiver 8. But, you know, I don't think anyone's saying he can't be wide receiver 30, which is startable in Dynasty.
Yeah, he's currently the last player ranked in my early 2 tier. And like everyone in the base 2 and later tier is like pretty insignificant. Like it's either we're talking about, you know, rookies and young players who I guess I think are similar or slightly worse bets than Quentin Johnston, or we're talking about like pretty flex production type veterans or like extremely old dudes. So yeah, like I just, the fear of missing out is not very high.
I'm at wide receiver 40. So
I think that's fine.
Low. He's actually,
I don't even know what number I have.
Actually, he's one spot ahead of Jameson Williams, actually, like one spot. So, just interesting. That was a lot more Quentin Johnston than I expected today. Given that this,
I have him 2 spots ahead of Jameson Williams in my wide receiver ranking, so not that different. I have no idea what the numbers are because I only have the overall numbers, I don't have the positional numbers, but I have Quentin Johnston followed by Elijah Moore, followed by Jameson Williams.
Pretty close. Yeah, that's pretty good.
So just a triangle of sadness.
Copium. There's a lot of copium going on.
Yeah, Jerry Jeudy right above them. Like it's really just like a depression corner of the rankings.
Right. Wide receiver is a sad state. It's actually the last one I update.
Yeah.
Because it's just too sad, depressing. Well, let's talk what we're here to talk about with our good friend Billy Boy here. Let's talk about QB rankings. So, Billy, question
Jay to QB.
As somebody who's not, I'll say, as locked in or as dialed in.
Someone who has a life.
Right. That's stepped away and has had a lot of stuff going on. Do you find it interesting to hear where we're talking about guys like, Jacob, where do you have Will Levis right now? Is he at 12? Like, where did he end up?
Well, as you know, I don't put numbers on these things, but that being said, yeah, I have him. Let's see. I have him currently at, looks like 14.
Okay. I have him at 17. When you've been away and kind of not as dialed in, is it almost like a shock to hear guys like that? Will Levis, who's played 2 games, get moved up that high, or are you just kind of rolling in with it considering where he was kind of viewed going in?
Yeah, I think it's hard to say because I was in this sphere for so long where, you know, someone throws 3 touchdowns and all of a sudden Taylor Heinicke is a hot high-end player, or Aaron Jones isn't re-signing with the Packers, so A.J. Dillon is a top-5 running back. Like, all these things, I'm well-versed in how this tends to change. Sure. So it is funny to kind of look at that and I think a lot of time spent in this space has made me tend to view players more as kind of like a, as Jacob always says, an investment, where we look at guys like Will Levis, and Will Levis's ceiling, if this team starts building around him, if his wide receiver 1 isn't the husk of DeAndre Hopkins, you know, with Mike Vrabel, the Titans with a good quarterback could be a seriously strong, heavy competing team. And with that in mind, Will Levis has that ceiling where if he is who he's looked like early on, which is a rookie, but also a rookie that's shown serious flashes, you know, we're looking at a guy that can average 4,000 yards and 30 to 35 touchdowns for the next 12 years. So being able to just invest in that, I mean, my league record right now, with that I'm in with y'all, I'm swimming in the quarterback purgatory. I would love to be able to go and grab some guy who I think I can hold on to and just say, I don't have to worry about my QB1 position for the next 5 years. And I think that's so nice because right now Jordan Love and Bryce Young is not doing it.
See, and that's where I want to hit where I think it's interesting. You mentioned 2 guys And one of them I still have ranked ahead of Will Levis, which is Bryce Young. I'm not jumping off.
I think that's a fair call.
I think it's unfair.
That's my difference. I have Levis over Young right now.
Really? Okay. Interesting. I don't think Bryce Young has been that bad, considering he's throwing to the ghosts of Adam Thielen, nobody else.
I'm fine with saying that he has a lot of valid excuses to be bad. I'm fine with saying that sometimes bad quarterbacks become good quarterbacks. Dude's been bad.
Yeah, and I think you also can make the same argument for Will Levis. So that's kind of where.
The quarterback landscape right now, maybe we can like quibble into these micro disagreements, like a Levis versus a Young. But I think we would all agree, and I think pretty much everyone would agree, like I'll rattle off 11 names that I would guess in some order, almost everybody would agree is the top 11, which is Mahomes, Allen, Hurts, Lamar Jackson, Justin Herbert, Joe Burrow, CJ Stroud, Trevor Lawrence, Tua Tagovailoa, Kyler Murray, and Anthony Richardson. And then we get this like middle group of basically, well, there's Dak, who's just like his own little thing, who just floats in the middle for eternity in Dynasty. But if we just put the Dak middle weirdo to the side, the rest is like we get this big group of like high upside quarterbacks with like a lot of question marks, which is like we have Watson, we have Justin Fields, we have Sam Howell, we have Will Levis, we have Bryce Young. Maybe I'm missing somebody, but that's like Purdy. Yeah. Right. That's kind of that crew. And then beneath that, everyone is completely depressing, right? Like then we're just into like guys that are like never really going to see that much of a value rise. Like we're talking about Goffs, we're talking about Genos, we're talking about Cars, we're talking about, you know, Kirks and Staffords and Russell Wilsons and Daniel Jones, like all these goofs. So it's really like that middle group is the interesting group to play right now.
Right.
Yeah. You know, right from Watson to who were the names again? Watson, Levis, Purdy, Bryce Young, Fields. Justin Fields, Sam Howell. Like those are probably the most interesting quarterbacks in Dynasty where there really is like if this guy could be worth three firsts one day. This guy could be out of the NFL in 2 years, like type range of outcomes.
Yeah. Right. And that's kind of just always been the recipe at the quarterback position. I mean, we even look back the last 20 years, look back in 2008, 2009, I bet off the top of your head, it's pretty easy to say the people that were in the top five drafted quarterbacks, just because good quarterbacks tend to stick around. So when you sit down and you say, all right, I have Peyton Manning or some other guy who was on the back end back then, like you don't really think about that other guy because there's so many established places. So when we have these quarterbacks that tend to stick around for, you know, 5, 10, 15 years in some cases, why do we end up giving those energies to the other people? And the question is less where do they rank in those different tiers and more which ones in those second tiers have the possibility to jump into the next level. Right. And I think that's where a guy like Levis or guys still like Bryce Young as well is so much more interesting than some of these other guys that we see as beneficiaries of a really good situation.
I agree in that. I think it's tiring to talk about like that top seven, right? Like we get it. Mahomes, he's good. Allen, good. Hurts, good. Herbert, Lamar, Burrow. Like to me, that top six doesn't really need to be talked about probably for 2 years, in my opinion. And then it gets really interesting for that. Like we know Kyler Murray can kind of like get back to it if he's healthy. He's only 26. We're in this time right now where the top like 10, 12 quarterbacks are all 26. Mahomes is the oldest. Like it's kind of a glory time for quarterbacks, but yet there's still just such a disconnect.
And there's no middle.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's the issue. It's like it's literally only Dak Prescott is like the only guy in the middle-aged quarterback bracket. It's like you have the guys that are like really near in the back nine. You have that Mahomes, Allen, you know, that group. You have like the really young emerging guys like your Lawrence and Stroud and these last couple classes. But yeah, it's like, you know, Carson Wentz is a I guess maybe he's back in our lives now. I keep saying he's out of the NFL, but I can't actually say that any longer today. You know, you have Goff, who's what, you know, Goff and Carr are like around, and they'll probably be around for a while, but you know, what are they doing really? And that's kind of
like
it.
Like Russ and not, Stafford is the next like group.
Yeah. That
we aren't close to the end. So like, there's just no one in that like age group of like 30 to 32. It's really only Dak who's like a pretty high end option. And after that, it's Goff. And after that, everyone is like, you know, a low end QB two, basically.
Yeah. And it seems like this is almost, I think in 20 years, when they do the Patrick Mahomes documentary, this is going to be like a 10-15 minute segment on the Netflix episode that just runs down this arms race that has come up in the last couple of years, where all of a sudden it's like, if you don't have a quarterback that with a good team around it can compete with Mahomes, you don't do anything.
Right.
So all of a sudden these guys like Andy Dalton and Carson Wentz, who were getting these replacement jobs to try and stick around and try to shamble together a deep playoff run, and maybe they get lucky, they aren't giving them the job because it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Like,
I don't think there's any situation you put Carson Wentz in where he's going to beat a team led by Patrick Mahomes. So why on earth would you do that when you could move on from him, not pay him $30 million, and draft some rookie and try and build a team around him and hope that in 4 years you're pushing again?
I mean, that's one of the most fascinating things of this offseason is that two teams, having seen very little of them in the previous year, were just like, we're starting Desmond Ridder and Sam Howell this year. Like, I thought those were two of the most interesting decisions that teams made. And I think wise decisions. Like, the alternative wasn't good. Like, they didn't have top five picks. They weren't drafting the top guys. They could have drafted Levis. You know, that would have been like a very viable alternative.
Yeah.
But like, you know, I think that was very wise to just be like, let's just try the young guy we have and see what happens, instead of like, I mean, like, to what purpose would it have been if they were just like, from day one this season, we're starting Jacoby Brissett and Taylor Heineke? Like, you're just pressing the fast forward button on your season at that point in terms of actually trying to compete for a Super Bowl, not accomplishing anything.
Yeah.
In what I'm going to call the contract era for fantasy quarterbacks, we always looked at contract security for running backs, and I'm almost getting to that point with quarterbacks because it feels like teams are finally starting to hit the reset button on quarterbacks quickly. And it kind of started like the butt end of that joke is Rosen. Obviously, he got 1 year and he was yeeted into the sun. Rightly so. I also think he kind of got screwed, quite honestly. But, I mean, Kyler is Kyler. But we're looking at a point where it's like, okay, who has the contract now? Who can we feel like Lamar Jackson was like a shaky, right? Oh, is he going to sign there? Where is he going to go? Like, that was the legitimate storyline. Then he gets the massive contract, and we saw his ADP literally rise after he signed.
That was so silly, as though Lamar Jackson was ever like not going to be in the NFL.
I understand that, but that's the contract era of quarterback in Dynasty, where you want safety at the position. It used to be
Daniel Jones is a big contract, and
that's not so safe, Daniel.
Yeah,
well, he was bad. Not only was he, and look, we're not saying like haha he got hurt, but he was dog shit before he got hurt.
Right, so, like, I don't think he was locked into being their starter next year, even if he had stayed healthy.
No, Tyrod Taylor operated that offense three times better.
I think this is going to be.
I'll finish my point here.
Yep.
And then we'll hand her off. In the contract era, to separate the differences in some of these middling tier before they break out, it has to be the rookie contract. They're cheaper when they're rookies. They're cheaper when they're young before they blow up. We saw that with Justin Herbert. Justin Herbert was a late first type pick. People weren't sure about him. Tyrod Taylor has the unfortunate lung puncture situation. Herbert comes out firing people. The people that were skeptical and didn't buy in are now paying 2 to 3 times the price of just taking that reroll risk, sending a late one, you know, even like a 108, 107 type pick. Now you're paying 3 firsts and plus for somebody like that. We're not saying that Will Levis is that guy. I'm happier to say someone like CJ Stroud is this year's Justin Herbert. For that example, where buying in now will be better, but you're going to pay 3 times more, and the cost of committing now is still going to end up being pretty cheap for for the potential blow-up outcome. Billy, you're muted.
Oh, Billy, you are on mute, sir.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was pulling up Spo track. I'm rusty, boys. no, but what I was trying to say was, I think one of the more interesting things this is going to be, and this is something that's probably going to come up this offseason and next offseason as well, is these guys that are in the like 7 to 12 range. These guys who, you know, there is discussions about whether certain players, like I think one of the bigger ones right now is Tua, if he is the guy that can take Miami to a Super Bowl. And, you know, they've given him the best team around him. He looks great. I'm not trying to bash Tua here. I think he looks phenomenal.
He looks great when it's not zone coverage and his first read is open. He looks fantastic.
Exactly.
Everything outside of that is 50-50.
Yes. So the question is, if you took Tua off and got this young upstart, you were able to upgrade the line, give some money to a free agent running back, can the Dolphins make a run in a better case with a serviceable rookie quarterback than they would with this, you know, aging player who has looked very good for the bulk of his career and now has a phenomenal team around him? But, you know, you kind of run into this position where it's, you have to give him $50 million a year or move up.
Right.
Those are your two options.
Right. I mean, and who knows? Like, it's, you know, the beauty of what they've built around Tua is pretty, I think, inseparable from how much money he's being paid, which is currently not that much, right? Like, there's not, you know, there's not going to be a version of this Miami team that pays Tua the type of contract that you would think he would command and is able to retain Tyreek on his current contract and pay Waddle the contract that he's going to command. I guess the version of that team is the 32nd ranked defense in the league. But
right,
it's going to be legitimately challenging. Like, they've been able to have this Tua Waddle combination and then just keep adding every year, from Tyreek Hill to Bradley Chubb to Jalen Ramsey to Terron Armstead. And, you know, we've seen this pattern with all these teams, right? Like, early in Josh Allen's career, they were adding all the time, and now they're not. Now they're losing Tremaine Edmonds in free agency, and when, you know, and they don't really have much of a wide receiver depth because they can't really pay one. They have to rely on drafting and internal replacements, and they also have a defense to worry about and address. Sorry?
It's showing in his fantasy performance. It really is.
I mean, he's still like 24, 25 points per game this year, I think.
Sure, but it's not
showing in real life, though. They're 5-4. Yeah,
it's
on the playoff spot right now.
Yeah, it's just not the same type of Josh Allen performances that's doing it.
Yeah, I feel like what we've done now is we've shifted the college quarterback debate, like the same conversations they were having around like Herbert, Tua, or Burrow, and we've just shifted that 5 years. And now it's get the guy, and is this guy going to be better than whatever rookie is coming down the road? And it's turning into, you know, it used to be you draft a bad rookie, your team is screwed for 5 years because all of a sudden you have to reset everything. Now these teams are getting so smart with how they're kind of building these teams that they can plug and play some of these guys. And it's becoming, oh, well, if you sign your quarterback to a 5-year contract with players like Daniel Jones or Ryan Tannehill, we start looking at the situation where it becomes really hard to move on from them. And I think that's what's going to be difficult.
I checked the stats on this, by the way, because it does feel like Josh Allen's having a down fantasy year. This is not true. He is at 24.6 points per game. Last year, 24.5. 2 years ago, 24.7. So he's right on the exact same pace as the last year. He's a full point behind his 2020 career high season. That was just when they used to just never, ever run. But so he's still dealing fantasy-wise, but they're having issues right now.
He's at 6 rushing touchdowns in only 9 games. Like, it's crazy. He's just right back to... Well, we're not going to run him as much.
But if you know the thing with Josh Allen, it's like they're not running it with James Cook at the goal line. So if Josh Allen scores a rushing touchdown, he's just taking that out of his passing touchdowns. Like, the two options for the Bills is like either it's a Josh Allen rushing touchdown or a Josh Allen passing touchdown at the goal line.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Same with Jalen Hurts. But I think it's getting to that point too with the contracts where, like, as I mentioned, it's kind of affecting people's like dynasty values. It's like, do I want to go and trade for Tua? No, like, I think there's a world where I'm speaking objectively in that, right. Like, you're looking at it in, you want like that nice safe option. Tua outside Miami is not as and appealing of a dynasty asset as Tua re-signing in Miami. So you can just go cheaper and get someone like Goff who has the same risk, who also puts up a steady, decent point total, and just wash your hands of that Tua situation. And it's way easier to live with Jared Goff not being re-signed than paying 3 firsts for Tua, 2+ firsts for Tua, and then being stuck with Tua in New York for the Giants. Because that's definitely not as good a scenario. I think it matters more than it has in the past. So with all that, let's start asking some questions on how we get to where we're at. We kind of covered the general landscape of how quarterbacks are viewed in Dynasty. Remember, leave a comment below on the video. Leave a comment on the podcast, wherever you can, and let us know what you think in 5 words or less about the Dynasty quarterback landscape. Best answer gets a shout out in the next video. This is Dynasty Points. I, of course, am Thomas Tipple. Joining me is, as always, is Jacob Sanderson, and back is an OG in Billy the Stone, Billy the Kid, Billy the Genius. Plenty of names for Billy Boy here. I see the questions. We're going to get to questions as we go. We don't normally handle questions like that, but we see you guys. You asked them. We'll get to them just once we get through this portion of the program. So what I have here are some questions that I have been asked via DM or in the Dynasty chat of the Fantasy Points Discord, which is free right now. I've got them to open it up. Everyone can join. All you need is the free fantasypoints.com. Oh my goodness. Subscription. You can get into that Discord, get into that channel, reach out to me at El Nostra Thomas. We can get you in there. It's free for everyone right now. We're just really trying to build that Dynasty community. So what I have here are some questions that we got asked. How do we rank them? How do we get there? How do we decide between them or the vets? How do we trade quarterbacks without sending one back if we really need one? All super important questions in Dynasty fantasy football. So I'm going to start off with the most obvious, like the most basic question we have here. QB rankings. How do we decide at the end of the day who goes where? Right? Like, how are you deciding, okay, Lawrence is going to be my QB? Because people really care about this. I know, Jacob, you're like a big, I don't really care about the number. I care about tiers. I'm a tier guy as well. Right. But how do you decide, okay, like for me, Herbert's my QB4. Right now, he's over Lamar Jackson and Joe Burrow. It took a real conversation of me staring at my screen for an hour talking to myself to get him there. But how do you make those decisions? What goes into it for you as a general landscape? How does it kind of fit in a process for you?
I mean, realistically, it's just not that important of a distinction. I don't know. Do you want to trade Stroud for Burrow in like a 1-for-1 deal? Like, you know, I wrote this piece recently on the site last week called Reasons to Trade in Dynasty.
And that's thinking, by the way, for anyone that doesn't know.
So I wrote this piece on Thinking About Thinking. It was called Reasons to Trade in Dynasty, and basically laid out kind of 4 general reasons. And the first one is preference. I like your player more than my player. And then the other player likes my player more than your player. And it's like, you know, those are the trades you always see tweeted about. You know, trade T. Higgins for Brandon Ayuk, trade Javonte Williams for DeAndre Swift. Like, you always see people tweet that kind of stuff. It's just those takes are usually so unactionable because you basically need to have 2 teams with pretty similar situations who at one point drafted or traded for their own player who like someone else's player more, right? And it's just, that's just usually pretty uncommon. Like, it's usually going to be 2 pretty similarly valued players. And usually, for the most part, the best bet is that the person rostering someone probably already likes them more than the market. At some point in time, they did. They traded for them or they drafted them. So all that to say, like, the amount of times in which you're just trading one similarly valued player for another with, like, very minimal add on top is just quite infrequent. So outside of a startup, like, choosing which player that's largely similar goes ahead of another is just not something I'd spend, frankly, a whole lot of time worrying about. Like, generally speaking, if I'm trying to trade for Stroud or Burrow or Herbert, it's like I'm not using the other one to get that done. I'm probably looking at it like, you know what would be really great is like a really top quarterback on this team, and I'm willing to pay for one. And probably the one that I pay for comes far more down to like what manager has that asset and which manager is willing to move that piece than like which one I like more, right? Like I would just generally look at it and be like, oh, let's knock on like the Stroud manager and the Burrow manager and the Herbert manager and, you know, and see who's willing to talk ball and get a trade done. And that's probably how it would come down to. So like, why did I rank Stroud higher? I just looked at it and I was like, fundamentally, I don't think these players are any different. I think we've seen what we need to see from Stroud. He's younger. It matters not that much right now, but like fast forward 2-3 years, if I still have these players on my team, people are going to start looking at some of these other guys and be like, oh, they're 29. And, you know, they're maybe going to move them down a little bit. So I'd rather just get ahead of it, move Stroud ahead. But it's not like I care that much, frankly.
Sure. And what we can do is we can actually tie that into one of the questions that we have here, where you talk about how do we decide like what a player's value is. I think Kayleen O'Connor is asking a pretty solid question on how we navigate that. We also have Nick Fury himself taking time away from the Avengers to come in and ask, so what are we willing to pay for Stroud or Levis? But what Kayleen had asked kind of ties into that. Is there any real difference between Stroud and Herbert in value? I don't think the 3-year age gap is worth much of anything. If we can get a plus to move to the other, I assume we should be. Now, I have Herbert higher, obviously, with what did I just say? He's my QB4 to QB7. But that's not really a large gap, honestly. And if we're getting the point output from Stroud, we're getting the same upside as Herbert, I would love to hear this conversation and where you're at with these two here specifically, because I kind of comped them earlier in the program with how their values are lining up. So it'd be real. I'm interested to hear how we're handling this one.
I agree with exactly what Kayleen said. If I can get a plus on top of either, I would take the side with the plus.
So you're just right in a line with they're the same archetype. They're the same. You're just willing to. Okay. A lot of people are going to be surprised by that because Herbert's been this golden boy, right? 25.
Nothing against Herbert. Right. Something against Herbert. I mean, it's just how impressive Stroud has been.
Right. Billy?
Yeah. I mean, it's the same thing. You can start looking into more how we feel one team is moving. You know, it's likely that Herbert in the next 3 or 4 years doesn't have Keenan and Eckler around. You know, Stroud is still young. He's on that rookie contract. So it's very likely in these next 2 or 3 years, they're bringing in a new guy. So there's some aspects you can be excited about and try and favor Stroud. But I think that's built into the fact that you're already projecting him forward into this position. Like, I think if you're saying Stroud is who he is right now and you're viewing him in the next couple of years with the team building around him, you're already factoring in Stroud's good now, he's going to be better in the future. So I feel like it's good to say, you know, can we get plus on top? I think that's pretty straightforward to say, yeah, sure. If there's one that you just really like more, I also have no problem saying, you know, buy into your own beliefs, pay up if you have Herbert and you just really like Stroud more. Feel free to throw some rando on top, you know, Quentin Johnston or something.
Okay. I find that I'm right there with you. Did not realize that Stroud has thrown one interception this year. Like that
I was trying to make the stat corner around Stroud, and it was just so hard to find a comparison that wasn't just rookie or Dak.
Amazing. Yeah, I think Stroud is in that conversation. And I think if you're doing that with Herbert, it's time to start looking down the line. Kyler, Tua, Richardson, Deshaun. Like, I think it's time you'd probably be making that move with all those guys then, I would assume.
Well, the more names you start to mention there, like now I'm starting to be willing to add stuff to Stroud from there, right? Like, it's as you go down the list, it's like, you know, okay, Trevor Lawrence. What would I add to go from Trevor Lawrence to CJ Stroud? Not much, right? Like, I see him like a tick below this group. Would I add a third for sure? Would I add a second? Maybe it depends on my team. Really rich team, seconds, you know, we can make it work. team where I need to pinch my pennies a little bit? Probably not. Probably would just stick with Lawrence. You know, we moved down to Tua. It's like, I would definitely move a second. Would I move a first? No. You know, probably same with Kyler. Let's move down to, you know, you mentioned Deshaun Watson. It's like, yeah, I'd move a first.
You move a first on top of Watson to get to Stroud?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Even your boy Dakota?
Definitely him. Yeah. I mean, you're shaving 9 years off. Right.
That was my cheeky Scott Barrettism with your love for Dakota.
I do love Dakota. And I call him Dakota when he's playing well. When he's playing poorly, I call him Dak. Yeah.
I feel like it should be the other way around.
No, I find Dakota endearing. It's not like the Jimmy James thing. It's the exact opposite. Like when Jimmy Garoppolo is playing well, I call him Jimmy G. When he's playing badly, I call him James to make fun of him. But that's because James is a lame-ass name, while Jimmy's kind of cool. Dak is fine, but Dakota's dope.
Right. Okay. I love that. That's good. 100%. I'm glad we got that breakdown on air.
I'm currently Dak laid, by the way. Like, I can't see your reaction. Everything that you guys do when I'm talking is like 30 seconds behind. So I'm going to just quickly exit and come back so that I'm not really confused.
Okay. We'll do that. He's going to exit and come back so he's not really confused. As you said, well, in that time, Billy, you and I were going to sit down. We're going to answer some of these. Let's have a look. Oh, Jacob came back really fast. That was really fast. Okay, so let's
ask. The delay is still happening, but I'll just make it work.
Okay, sounds good. You can hear us, like everything. Yeah, audio.
Oh, I can hear you perfectly. It's basically just like we're recording on audio. All I can see is whatever face you were making 30 seconds ago.
Fair enough.
Just hold that one. Let's answer the second half of this Nick Fury one. What are we willing to pay for Levis? Because Levis is someone you and I disagree with like a little bit. I've seen some trades that you talked about. I traded Deontay Johnson like straight up for him. I was pretty comfortable with that. I mean, then Deontay Johnson went on to score 22 points and I looked like an absolute buffoon, but
I don't think you look like a buffoon on that one.
Hey, the league got at me a little bit, but I mean, that's the life of trading, right? Because, well, it's a priors thing, right? If somebody didn't like Levis
for Will Levis,
and they see,
and I mean, I will not have my Deontay Johnson credentials challenged, but I would happily move him for Will Levis.
Right, but I mean, if somebody has a prior about a quarterback, they're going to trade and be like, "What do you?" Yeah. So yeah. Let's shed the narrative that way. What are you trading Will Levis, or what are you trading for? Oh my God, what are you willing?
What to am do I trading for Will Levis? Levis?
Oh my God,
for him like five times. I'll just name off my trades.
Do it.
So, and for the record, like, these are the five I've gotten done. So, you know, wherever those are, there was like probably 25 to 30 offers that were rejected. Oof. And then a few that were coming back in that I said no to. So I got, three done, I want to say, prior to the Thursday night game. So the first one that I got done was in the Full Tilt Patron Psycho League. And that was 2 seconds, 24 second. I think I'm 6-3 in that league, so probably a late 24 second, a 25 second, and DeMario Douglas. My next Levis transaction was a late, like a current buy teams 24-1, just straight up. And then my other Levis buy, maybe those were the only two prior. Anyway, during the game, we moved. There was one other one that was part of like a massive deal. It was, we gave up Cooper Kupp and Marquise Brown and Tony Pollard and Matthew Stafford and Leonard Fournette. And we got Will Levis, Stephon Diggs, Ken Walker, and a 25 second. And I have no idea how I was able to remember all nine pieces of that.
I don't even remember when you just said it.
Anyway, and then the other two, another buy teams first or projected buy teams first and David Njoku for Will Levis.
Okay.
And then the most expensive one, like all of those ones were like teams where Levis was useful. Two of them, it was actually a tank team where I was just like firing off one of my three or four firsts for Levis, essentially making my draft pick early. Another one was just like a team where I had one top quarterback. I have Lawrence and the rest is just kind of mid. I had like Geno and Jordan Love. And then this one was probably the most interesting. It was also the one that I paid the most. It was the only time where I paid probably what I would say is above maybe what I have him ranked at. But it was a spot where I have Lamar Jackson, Jimmy Garoppolo, and Aiden O'Connell are my only quarterbacks. Tom's in this league. Mm-hmm. And I'm 13-3. Well, now I'm 13-5, but I was 13-3 at the time of the trade.
League median.
So, yes. So I'm clearly not going to have, and I only have my own first. So I clearly am not going to have a top six pick. And so my chances of having a starting quarterback in 2024, along with Lamar Jackson, were basically either Aiden O'Connell somehow is the Raiders' 2024 starting quarterback, which seemed not the most likely scenario, or we manufacture some sort of trade in the offseason, basically. Right. So I figured, why not get ahead of it and solve that problem while also getting a QB2 that isn't Aiden O'Connell for the rest of this year. So we traded our 24 first, which, like I said, projected late, plus Josh Downs and Aiden O'Connell. And I know people are very excited about Josh Downs. So that was probably the scary piece. It is a 0.75 PPR league, which I don't know, maybe hurts Downs a little bit. But yeah, that was the big ticket item purchase that got some people upset. I didn't see anybody too upset at my other transactions. But if the answer is, what would I trade for Levis? It's like, I'd love to trade a late one for Levis. I'm willing to add a little something like the Njoku or the DeMario Douglas. I would not do that Downs deal universally. This was more of a case of like, I felt like I was probably going to have to overpay for a quarterback at some point in trade right. because I was just not going to have a second one going into the offseason. I would probably also need a rental for the rest of this season. And I was like, instead of paying a rental now and then buying quarterback in the offseason, like, let's just try and kill two birds with one stone and take a shot on a guy where I actually see some upside to potentially win that deal later, even if we're kind of losing it on value today.
Right. That's being willing to take a little bit of a total value hit now for the good of your team. I think that's one thing in dynasty trading that is not accepted. It's I got to win every deal right now. I can't risk potentially losing value. Nick Fury says that's fair situation dependent. And I mean, that's every trade really. Yeah. Like, we have people right now, they're asking for trades and chances are it's just like, what does your micro market tell you? Like, I'm going to give you my opinion in a vacuum, but really at the end of the day, your micro market is determining
right.
what you would and wouldn't feel comfortable trading. So,
yeah. And it's one of those spots where like, I kind of felt like I wanted to live in that middle tier. Cause it was like, you know, frankly, like I don't have a million picks. Like, I have basically just all my own picks. So I don't really have enough picks to go out and buy like another top 10 quarterback. I'm trying to compete. So I don't really want to like blow up my lineup to go get that top 10 quarterback. Like, I don't really have enough players to spare where I'm going to trade two or three starters for that top 10 quarterback. So like, what are we going to do, right? It's either we're going to try and live in that middle tier and take a bet, or we're going to go with a rental. And you know, in my opinion, like, the rental is almost like a known loss in the long term, right? Like, whatever you trade for Derek Carr now, he's going to be worth less in the offseason. Like, you're not like, it's you're just like basically just signing up to take a small loss to get by in the meantime. You know, obviously way more risk on the Levis trade, but like, you know, you can overpay for Levis today and come to love that trade in 2 years. Like, that's entirely possible. It's also possible you hate it, but there's like some upside in trading for that Levis, Howell, Bryce Young, etc. group right now.
And that's how you get ahead in Dynasty. Like, realistically, it's taking your shots and, you know, not being afraid to lose. Like, that's there's nobody that embodies that more than League of Record and Walkabout co-host Tom Lee. You'll hear us talk about him quite often. He's the most savage for YOLO bombing trades, where he does not care if he comes out at a loss, because he knows if this hits, he's ahead of the game, and he quite often is. It's just something interesting to note.
It's like he wakes up in the morning and decides to cause chaos.
He does all the time. And those are the types of managers that seem to always have, you're like, how did this guy acquire this guy and that the deal later? That's usually how. Let's answer these questions, then we'll do Stack Corner. And then we'll kind of teeter off the QB conversation and get into player picks and get out of here. Because I would like to know how you trade quarterbacks without getting one back. I find that was a good little intro to it, but we have some questions here that have been chilling. Daniel Fisher is asking, rebuilding and stocked up with picks. I have 7 picks next year, 6 firsts. I traded 4 seconds for George Pickens and Kendra Miller today. Thoughts? I think that's expensive. I think that's very expensive. Not the biggest fan of it, as I'm not a Pickens guy. But I don't think it's horrible.
Yeah, I mean, I don't love it. Just I don't really know what the. I guess I'd just be shooting higher, I guess, if I'm trying to bundle up my picks. But it's fine.
Yeah, I feel like just like individually picking out seconds, you could probably do more. Right. Like I think it's fine. I don't hate it. I know I'm kind of the George Pickens enthusiast among us, but
4th highest viewed video, yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know. I feel like if you could take like 2 seconds and go get like George Pickens, then 2 seconds would get you a lot more than Kendra Miller.
I'm wondering where the Kendra Miller value comes from. Like, if this is a 1Q,
I kind of read it as 3 2s for Pickens and 1 2 for Miller, which I mean, yeah. Miller's not, it's just he's been cursed here. He sprained his ankle again on Sunday, so I don't know when we'll ever see him again. Guy can't stay healthy, but
if this is like a 1QB scenario and those seconds are like later in a 1QB, then I think the Pickens situation is fine. I think he can be a producer at that point. The Kendra Miller one is the value that I'm scratching my head at. Bindles, what's up, man? Happy to have you.
GMGM, love it.
Here. We love that. We have another one from Sober Money. Hey, there you go.
Like
Breece Hall. Laporta in a second. Give me Breece Hall there.
I'll take Breece Hall.
Easily. And that, I wouldn't think twice about it. That kind of changes your mind if it's a tight end premium type situation. If it's a full 1 point premium, maybe.
I still probably take Breece just because, I mean, he's still in the ACL year. Like, yeah, it's
sick as hell.
Damn, he's good. He looks so
good. If it's like, it would need to be a full tight end premium or like a 2 tight end league, maybe. But like, if it's just your regular half point tight end premium league, I'll take Hall.
We have Depeche. What up, Depeche? In a 14-team league rebuilding team, I have an offer for Deontay Johnson. That would be his Deontay Johnson. For Jaden Reed and Zach Charbonnet, what do y'all think? I currently have the 101, the 103, and the 108 in next year's draft.
Jaden Reed strikes me as like a forever roster clogger, but maybe I'm missing something there. I just feel like he's the kind of guy that you like put into a trade to make it a little bit more valuable because someone wouldn't want to do Deontay for Charbonnet straight, but then you like never actually start Jaden Reed and no one ever cares that you have Jaden Reed. So I would like counter with like Charbonnet in a second or something like that.
Yeah. I don't see a situation where Jaden Reed is like starting on your roster unless you're in a complete just horrible team. So
I think he's a permanent wide receiver depth. I think that's where I'm at with Jaden. He looks like the best receiver on the Packers, which isn't saying a lot because Watson has looked terrible and Dobbs has been shaky at best. So
he's like a fine player, but you just need a lot to go right. Like we don't really know how good he is. The situation sucks. So like we need him to show a lot of growth and we need the situation to improve. Like it's just,
right, I agree. I would also counter for that second. As we're talking about second round picks, I really feel like people don't know the value of second round picks. So I just want, we went back to 2017 to 2021 and we went and looked at who was drafted in those second round. Right. So let 201 is probably the most cursed of these picks, but 201 was Evan from 2007 to 2021. I'm just going to list them off in order. Evan Ingram. You're liking that right now. Sam Darnold, Mecole Hardman, Keyshawn Vaughn, Rashad Bateman. Garbage. 202. This is Superflex. Patrick Mahomes, Kerryon Johnson, Hollywood Brown, Henry Ruggs, Trey Sermon.
Mahomes.
Couple not bad. Let's do a 203.
Mahomes covers that entire list, right?
Right.
Would you trade 5 seconds for Mahomes? I think so.
Kind of silly, right? Kareem Hunt, Christian Kirk, Darrell Henderson, T. Higgins, Rondale Moore. That's pretty good. You get
100%.
Juju Smith-Schuster. Say what you want about him now, but you could trade that guy for 2-3 firsts at one point.
Former Dynasty 101.
Exactly. Yep. Juju Smith-Schuster, Cortland Sutton, Hakeem Butler, Denzel Mims, and Elijah Moore. Okay, that's not terrible. Mitch Trubisky, Josh Allen, Daniel Jones, Michael Pittman, Terrace Marshall. I'm not going to read all of them.
I really miss the era of Dynasty when like people would just let like a top 10 drafted athletic quarterback go to the
right? I know. Second. But like here's some more. Brandon Ayuk was 206. Pat Freiermuth, 207. Michael Gallup, who was viable for a couple of years, 207. Amon-Ra St. Brown, 209. Dallas Goedert, 211. Godwin, 212.
Sam Laporta this year.
Second-round picks, Achan. Second-round picks.
Josh Downs, Rashee Rice.
Exactly. Crazy value. Yes, you have Trey Sermons and TDP and a couple of awful picks. But first round's not looking so hot all the time either. John Ross, Paris Campbell, Royce Freeman, Jalen Reagor, Jerry Jeudy, Mecole Hardman. Mecole Hardman was 201. But you get my point. Like it's not all bliss in first round either. Second round picks, crazy valuable in Dynasty. If that list didn't tune you into that, go back and have a look and really see where your league mates drafted certain guys.
I mean, and that's part of the thing. Like you don't really want to necessarily bundle up your second round picks in these deals, because part of the appeal of the second round picks is like you're really just taking a scattershot approach, you know, and it's where it's like, you know, I know that a lot of my second round picks like are going to turn out to be useless, but it's like, ideally I have like net positive in terms of like more second round picks total than the amount of leagues I'm in across however many leagues. And then we're just going to take a bunch of darts and see what happens. And like, hopefully I'm a little above the market on the best picks and, you know, a little below on the worst, but like really it is just kind of a situation of like, if you came out of a second round where it's like, you took Kendre Miller, you took Tank Bigsby, you took Josh Downs. All right. And you took Sam Laporta. It's like, two of your four picks are useless, but like you're coming out ahead, you know, like I have a ton of second rounds where it's like that, where it's like, you look and it's like, oh, I took this second rounder, he's worth nothing. Took this second rounder, he's worth nothing. Oh, my third second round pick is great. You know? And that's fine. You're just through and hopefully you hit on one big target.
I think one of the easiest things the Dynasty advice givers give out is that, oh, these second and third round picks don't matter. They matter so fucking much in the grand scheme of things. Yeah, if it hits, but that's really your only chance at truly rebuilding is getting those options. Depeche is Puka, a great third round.
Yeah, Puka. Tank Dell. Tank Dell going the fifth.
Chris Sanzo says this whole segment was just an excuse to bring up Trey Sermon. It was. Get baited. I'm glad you had to listen to that. Bindle says traded Kirko to Jacob for Danny Dimes, and he proceeded to immediately tear his ACL. # poetic justice. Brutal. Chris says his only Levis trade so far is I traded Levis away for a pick that projects currently 107-109 range, and he has Law and Murray, so he has some safety. I like that. That's very nice. We have one last question from Biddles, and we're going to do Billy Stat Corner. Have a team with Lamar, Hurts, Bijan, Andrews, and Davante Adams. That is 2-6.
How is your team 2-6?
Well, I have no idea. Don't
I guess well, Bijan have, and Davante only score theoretical points.
And Lamar has had some real stinkers. Yeah. Don't have my 24-1. Do I soft pivot Adams and anyone else old, quote unquote, to save some value for next year? Or since the team is high value, who cares? I would definitely be moving off Adams.
I'm curious why Bindles is in a league. I'm curious why Bindles is in a league in which they only have an 8-game record in 9 weeks.
Yeah, where's the medium, buddy?
Bye. That's funny. No, I'm saying where's the other week? Yeah, have bye weeks? Is this like a 13?
Yeah, he has a bye.
Actually, yeah, Bindles, let's get down to that, buddy. Let's and then
do the math here.
Tank Bigsby's a bum. He is a bum. Terrible. Look, we're gonna take a quick second. We're gonna take a break. We're gonna get a little refresh, give you guys a break from our voice. We're an hour in. We're gonna hit Billy Stack Corner. I'll explain how this is gonna go, and hopefully Jacob and I can come out with a W on this one. I know Billy's got an MVS laying somewhere in there, so we're gonna find out. Sit tight, 5 seconds.
I wasn't fast enough.
He was trying to get
a MVS. MVS. My first guess is MVS.
All right. So if you haven't heard Billy's Stat Corner, it's probably been like a good year since you've done one. This is how it's going to go. Billy's going to ask Jacob and I a data-related question. If you need data, go to data.fantasypoints.com, sign up, get yourself the data suite. It's only $50 this year. Jumps to $200 next year. You're going to get into that as early as you can. We'll also have some of those to give away, so you're going to want to be sitting tight. Okay, so this is what's going to happen. Billy's going to ask us a data-related question. Jacob and I are going to have three strikes to guess the answers. If we lose, we lose. If Billy wins, he gets bragging rights.
Yeah, for a while now. Like, we used to just to do this every week, but this is really going to stick around for a while.
Right.
And I held the bragging rights for a while back then, too.
Oof. We were on a roll there for a while.
We got on one little hot stretch. You were killing us, and then we started to make a comeback, and then you abandoned the show.
We tagged in the Podfather.
You're so afraid that we would ever even it up. You were just like, oh, they might get back to 500 one day. I'm simply
scared of that streak.
Can't let him catch up. Matt don't call it a comeback.
Cheated when we said not to cheat. He went and looked the answer up or something. It's just
I remember that.
Completely hilarious. Let's all right, Billy, let's go. Hit us with maybe the only Billy Stat Corner of 2023. Let's get it.
Let's do it.
All right. Look, it was a special one. I wanted to get MVS in here. I couldn't. So we're doing running backs because MVS doesn't have stats to report. So starting it off with one of the bigger storylines of the year, Jahmyr Gibbs has been on a tear as of late. But one of the places he has consistently fallen short is red zone touchdowns. In fact, despite having 10 carries inside the 20, 6 carries inside the 10, and 1 carry inside the 5, he has exactly 0 touchdowns from snaps inside the 20. Only 3 players have more red zone touches, red zone rush attempts, without red zone touchdowns. Who are those players?
Oh, wow. Okay.
Oh, that is a strong question, Billy.
This is a good one.
That doesn't have red zone carries.
Okay, Tom, you start thinking AFC and I'll start thinking NFC.
Got it.
No, this is a fun one. I really like this because, you know, if they get a 50-yard touchdown, it counts. Or it doesn't count.
I think Bijan's. Oh, sorry, I'm an AFC. Never mind. Okay.
Bijan has a red zone touchdown because it's the one that he caught one handed and then he
through. That was a catch, right? This has to be a rush.
Is it a rush or is it a touch?
It is rush attempts and rushing touchdowns.
Okay.
Oh, so it's okay. So then Bijan probably is a decent guess. Although I don't know if he actually has that many. He only has 2 rush attempts inside the 10. I don't know about inside the 20. But I believe that all of his red zone touchdowns, I think almost all of his touchdowns,
Breece Hall scored from outside of that.
Oh, that's a good point. Okay, so yeah, Breece Hall has, let's see, he didn't score a touchdown for a while. His first touchdown of the year, I think, was the Denver game, and it was like from forever away. No, he scored one against the Eagles, the one that they let him score.
Right.
That was like 5 yards away.
Hey, glad
I was hoping. I was hoping Breece Hall would be
not a Patriot. Yeah. Zeke has vultured. So we can eliminate the Patriots. We can eliminate the Jets. Yeah. The Bills. James Cook doesn't get any touches inside of there. Latavius Murray doesn't get enough. It's all Josh Allen. Mm-hmm. We can skip that. So they're out. Miami, everyone on their fucking team scores from inside the red zone. So we can nix the AFC East altogether. AFC North, Justice has scored. Lamar has scored. We can eliminate the Ravens. Steelers, Najee has definitely.
Oh, that's a great one. Yeah, I'm seeing Depeche in the chat. I think Damian Pierce.
You think he's had that many?
Oh, he's had a million. Like he's had so many goal line opportunities. I don't know if he has converted one. Possible he's converted one.
You have 3 strikes, so we can start off early with Damian.
He hasn't converted many.
Are we taking that count?
Are you going to go down?
Let's go. I was just asking. There was no like hard. All right. Damian Pierce has exactly 1 rushing touchdown from an inside rush.
Oh, man.
Come on. I thought Damian. when I was coming up with this one, I was like, oh, Damian Pierce has got to be.
Yeah, here's Pierce has been so bad.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, I guess he got one. Okay, here's one that I – can you think of Alvin Kamara scoring?
Yep.
Inside the red zone?
Absolutely, you did. Yeah, when? He did. He scored a rushing touchdown 2 weeks ago inside. It's like a pretty long one. Yeah.
Well, yeah. A long one, though. Did he scored inside the 20?
Inside the 20, for sure.
Okay.
Yeah. It was against Indy, actually, I'm pretty sure. That was not a 20-yard run.
He had a receiving touchdown, and I know he had a second touchdown in that game, but okay, maybe it was a rushing touchdown inside the 20.
Yeah, because I was selling. I just traded for him. Strike. So it's just to reiterate for anyone that might just be tuning in, don't cheat, but if you have a suggestion where this is the honor system.
What about Miles Sanders?
Miles Sanders would be good too, but I don't know. You said a minimum of how many touches?
10 rush attempts inside.
Just inside the 20.
Okay, I could go Miles Sanders. He's been absolute dog water.
Okay, let's do Miles Sanders.
Scored.
Oh, no, wait. I definitely have one. I have one that's 100%.
Okay.
100%. Alexander Mattison. There's no way he's not on this. I feel great about this one.
You're convinced.
Well, you put good faith in Jacob. Alexander Mattison absolutely demolishes this metric. Like, far and away above anyone else on this.
He's
list.
So terrible.
Like, impressively. Okay, 10 bad.
Touches. James Cook.
He's got to have, like, 25 touches and zero touchdowns.
James Cook might be a good one.
Does James Cook have 10? Oh, we actually – has James Cook scored a red zone touchdown or no? I thought he scored one.
James
Maybe
Cook
not.
One rushing – two rushing touchdowns? I'm pretty sure it was from further away.
From further than the 20? I don't know about this one. Maybe. Let's see.
We only need 10, right? So
we need two more guys, right?
Yeah, and we have two strikes.
Two more guys. There's going to be a weird one too.
There's a fullback in here somewhere.
I don't mind the Bijan call because I think Bijan is not. I think Bijan has only scored like receiving touchdowns inside the 20. So I don't mind this one, but I don't know if he's gotten 10. He's only gotten two inside the 10. So you would need 8 inside the 11 to the 20, which is possible.
Right. That is pretty tough. I kind of like your Miles Sanders call. Like, I kind of like them. He's been really bad.
Sure. And I don't think he scored it. I don't think that he scored a red zone touchdown. Maybe he has, but let's try it.
Either we're going to go Miles Sanders.
Miles Sanders did not make the cut. You are correct. He does not have the scoring, but he only has 6 rush attempts inside the red zone.
Oh, man.
Which is baffling. Chuba is
not Ramondre. He scored Ramondre has scored a few goal line touchdowns this year.
He has, yeah.
Minimum 1 against the Dolphins. And I think 1 against the Raiders.
Andre has 2.
Okay.
This is going to be – man, it's tough. What about – no, Rashad White definitely has.
Yeah, Rashad White had 2 this week.
Definitely.
So
we're 2 strikes, eh?
For sure.
Yeah, Barkley, I think. I can't think of it like off the top of my head, but
damn, we got 2 strikes on this now. One more and we're out. We got to really hammer this down. What about
has Pacheco scored a goal line touchdown? No, Pollard scored 2 goal line touchdowns in week 1. None since, but he scored 2 in week 1.
Yeah, I said say quads. Nick Fury is saying Pollard. What about like. Jeez, it's going to be something kind of ridiculous. I really thought Sanders is it. Like, he's been abs. I'm trying to think of who's just been terrible. Oh,
what about – he might not have 10 touches yet, but what about Jonathan Taylor?
Ooh, Taylor might be good.
He has scored – I'm pretty sure this was his first touchdown this week, and it was receiving.
I think he has 10 carries inside the 20?
I don't know. Might not.
He was out for so long.
Yeah, he might not. Khalil Herbert, I think, has a short touchdown.
What about Jerick McKinnon? He gets a lot of...
No, he doesn't get handoffs inside the 20.
Okay.
I'm not sure he has 20 carries total on the year.
What about Jerome Ford? Jerome Ford only scores...
He doesn't ever get red zone touches.
Damn, that's a tricky part of the question, you sneaky.
But he might have 10. I mean, 10's not that many. 10, like, it's possible Jerome Ford, because it's not just goal line, it's red zone. Like, Jerome Ford might have 10 carries.
I'd say DeAndre Swift, but I know they gave him a pity one.
Just to give y'all, like,
Dylan has also scored a goal line touchdown for sure, because he scored a touchdown and he's physically incapable of running 20 yards. So it must have been a goal line touchdown.
You get a phone a friend. So I've heard, I'm not making that up.
Oh, yeah, we get a hint, right?
Don't at me. We get a phone a friend. So let's – oh, Depeche said he had a toss sweet touchdown last week. Give us the division.
You can make up any hint you want. That's too
– come on.
That feels pretty restrictive.
Do any hint you want.
I'll give you two. So first off, 45 total running backs made the metric of – 10 or not just running backs. That also includes like Lamar and Hurts and Taysom Hill.
Oh, right. Okay.
Smoking this. But all these players are running backs. Also, all of them were drafted after 2019. So 2019 and moving forward.
Okay. So that doesn't help.
I said this before we went on the show.
So you can rule out Derrick Henry and that's it.
Love if someone
and all the quarterbacks that we weren't considering.
I kind of like this one.
No, he scored one against the Chiefs. And
Javonte, okay.
I would love if someone was able to give me like a when we reveal these, a hint for one of these characters or these players, because I really tried hard to come up with something useful.
Okay, so we need two more names, and
what about Chuba?
We have no strikes left. Chuba maybe, although we already went down this Carolina rabbit hole. Dead.
Antonio,
I don't know if I want to take two. Antonio Gibson does not get the ball.
I'm just listing off running backs at this point.
Yeah, fair enough. All I'm doing is shouting down other ideas. I haven't come up with one of my own in a while.
Michael Kelly, not bad. He does suck.
That's like, that's a great guess. Because he had the role for a while with Eckler. Right. He never scored a touchdown when Eckler was there. He scored a long touchdown against the Chiefs when Eckler came back. Did he score in the Miami first game of the season? That's the only one
I don't think he did.
I like this better than anything else, and I can't think of anything else. So either we're right or we're ending the game.
Joshua Kelly?
Joshua Kelly, the pride of UCLA, I think.
We're going to go Josh Kelly. To college?
I don't know.
I think it was.
Joshua Kelly is a very rough hill to die on. He did, in fact, have a red zone touchdown against Miami.
Yeah, week one. It was week one. Yeah,
week one. Week one, he had it. So this is going to be really unfortunate. So Tom pull one of the players.
It's Gibson.
Jacob immediately shut it down.
No way, it's Gibson. Is it Gibson?
Incorrectly, it's not Gibson. It is, in fact, Javonta Williams. His KC one was a receiving touchdown. And he has no rushing touchdowns on the year.
Hey, shout out. It wasn't me. I'm not even going to say that was suspense. Oh, it's suspense. Suspense got that one. Shout out to suspense.
I didn't know that they attempted a forward pass in the Kansas City game.
No.
Also, it was also slightly said in the chat, y'all just went the wrong way. Credit to Depeche, who shout out the Texans. It's not Damian Pierce. Is it Devin Singletary?
He has 10?
Logged 14 red zone rush attempts.
Wow, I never would have guessed that.
He has five more than Bijan.
Oh my god.
Devin Singletary having 14. I never would have guessed that in a million years. There's no way. Like if Tom suggested Devin Singletary, I'd have been like, there's no fucking chance he has 10 red zone touches.
Hey, we answered the question in the Fantasy Points Discord earlier. Where do we have Damian Pierce ranked? I have him ranked at RB29. Okay. Now that I know Devin Singletary has four, that's what I was going to say. Like, now that I know what Singletary's inside the 20 is, he might drop to 45. This is crazy. Bindle says it took Javonte over CD and they gave Davis Stan startup rough.
Also, I do want to just jump on this real quick to once again shout out Alexander Mattison. We were mid-game, so I couldn't list off these stats. Alexander Mattison's statistics going through the 20s to 10. Inside the 20, he has 16 carries for 10 yards. Inside the 10, he has 9 carries for negative 4 yards. And inside the 5, he has 7 carries for negative 6 yards.
Okay, so let me just, I was doing the math. He has, it was 16 for 10, right? You said 16 for 10. Then you said it was what, 9 for negative 4?
Yep.
And then you said it was what, 6 for negative 5?
7 for negative 6.
7 for negative 6. Oh my God. That's incredible. So he has a total of 32 carries for 0 yards inside the 20.
Well, keep in mind the 20 includes the 10 and the 5. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's insane.
I thought you had segmented them out. That would have been way cooler if he had 32 carries for 0 yards.
Yeah, I don't have those stats. Also, Saquon has 3 carries for exactly 0 yards in the 5. So.
Given the time that Billy said he had to get out of here, we're once again going to have to push this fucking question back. We will do
What's the question? What's the question? I'm known for giving very quick answers.
We're Billy Lockin. You're going to be here for another 10 minutes. Okay. We're going to get to it. Kenny, we'll stay still. We don't do start and sit on this program, but thank you for asking. Discord members question. This is from Fantasy Clown. What do you use your bench spots for? A, players to trade away. B, balance. So many start and sit decisions will exist. C, player handcuffs. You put in brackets insurance. D, players other teams might start. So I guess you're playing defense against others. And then E, upside roles. How do you handle your bench?
You want a few players that are there for bye weeks and injuries that like are projectable, right? So yeah. You want a Jalen Warren, for instance. It's like, okay, he has like a projectable role and I can throw him in my lineup anytime I need to. Ideally in my, like, I made the finals universe, he's not starting for me, but he's like a startable piece, right? You want a couple pieces like that. You know, Michael Thomas, great example this year of like a guy that's been like not really great, but basically every week until this last week, if you had to start him in a pinch, you're it's not the end of the world.
Yeah, Josh Palmer.
Yeah. So you want like a couple guys like that. And then from there, I think, you know, the best use of your bench spot, if you could, would just be to have like all young upside prospects. You probably can't have that many of them because you also need a lineup and you also want to have picks, and you know, we can't all have what we want. So you probably don't have 12 elite prospects and all your picks and a great starting lineup. So you want as many of those as you can. And then from there, I view it mostly as like just taking stabs at people who are most likely to hit your lineup. So that's why I usually fill out my bench with a bunch of backup running backs once I'm basically past the point of players that either have value to me now or might have value to someone or me in the future, where it's just, okay, like, you know, Deontay Foreman, a couple injuries in front of him, all of a sudden he's in my lineup. Gus Edwards got injured in front of him, all of a sudden he becomes that, you know, like that Jalen Warren type piece that they can filter at your lineup. That's mostly it. But yeah, it's basically guys that, players that are like a part of my bye week rotation, players that I hope to accrue in value, and players that are one or two things removed from hitting my lineup.
I'll say backup quarterbacks. Yeah. If you're looking at waiver wire and you're like, do I want wide receiver 672,000? Like, do I want LaVisca Chenault? Right. Or do I want Jacoby Brissett? I want Jacoby Brissett. Because in the off chance that Brissett ends up starting, you not only have a what you would assume is a semi-viable Josh Dobbs situation where you can come in and play, or you can move him for a third and a four where you couldn't have moved him for anything, and Chenault's never going to be worth anything on your roster. I picked up Josh Dobbs everywhere I could on the off chance he could start, and that's worked out very well, been able to move him for seconds. And in our league of record, without him, I would be absolutely smoked. So it's cheaper than going and buying a rental quarterback to just pick them up off of waivers and sit them on your bench and hope. That's what I would be doing. Guys like Tyler Huntley, Josh Johnson, Carson Wentz is still on dynasty rosters right now, and thank God he got signed. Yeah. So backup and potential starting quarterbacks is like one of the fastest ways to turn your roster over.
Yeah, I'm always eyeballing guys who I think could get me like 7 to 10 points any given week. And if I don't think they're doing that, they're either upside guys, like Jacob said, guys who I think might have one to two things go right. They can work themselves into a serious role with their team. Or it's just assets who are players who, if one thing goes right, I can trade them for 1.5 what they are. So that's a lot of guys like, I mean, now it's a bad case because it feels like he's just there forever. But AJ Dillon was that guy for years where, you know, you could sit at AJ Dillon, you could play him any given week and he could get you 7 to 10 points. Maybe he gets a touchdown and you get 15. But there was always that thing with Aaron Jones where if Aaron Jones goes away, AJ Dillon is extremely valuable. Now,
Kyron Williams was a great example of that. We didn't know what can happen with Cam Akers if you stash Kyron Williams on your bench. Also,
as we just sit here and say,
I feel so fucking bad for Cam Akers that he blew his other Achilles. I feel so bad for him. He was actually kind of he was confident pointing at guys after he blocked them and shit. And then his other Achilles went. So just a really, really sad situation.
Yeah, I wrote up
fan of Cam Akers.
Yeah, I wrote a little tribute to Akers in my Sunday Drive this week that I can read out while we're on that topic. I said,
do you need your music? Do you need your sad?
No, I don't want the sad music. I don't want to make it all dramatic. Look, you know, the Cam Akers journey in like my podcasting and writing career has been varied. We basically went from like being very big touts of Cam Akers very early in his career to being a little bearish on him on his return, and then ultimately, you know, fairly critical of what he's been doing the last couple of years and trying to give fantasy advice. But I did want to bring up some, you know, kind of the four fulsome Cam Akers story. Cam Akers was truly one of the most talented high school football players ever. We saw that he was the emergency quarterback, was one Josh Dobbs injury away from playing quarterback this week. And that's because he played 4 years of high school football at Clifton High, and he had 8,140 passing yards, 5,103 rushing yards, and 149 total touchdowns.
Jesus Christ.
As a dual threat quarterback, was eventually recruited to Florida State as the top prospect in Mississippi, was the highest rated top prospect for Mississippi of any position in over 15 years, and was the consensus number one running back recruit going into college in a class that included Jonathan Taylor, Travis Etienne, DeAndre Swift, Najee Harris, and J.K. Dobbins.
Oh my God.
Cam Akers was 11 years old. His mother was diagnosed with breast cancer, and he watched her beat it. And his father referred to the experience as seeing that if his mom could go through that type of something, there is nothing that can stop him or anyone in that family from getting what they want. And surely, going into his senior season, Akers declared his desire to be the greatest player to have ever come through Mississippi. But more than that, Akers said he wanted to be remembered as a leader figure on and off the field and someone who always does the right thing. Clearly, his body did not cooperate in the NFL on multiple occasions. But for a man who discussed and prided himself on his resilience, it is hard to say that his fortitude in returning from a torn Achilles to play in the NFL playoffs and win a Super Bowl is one of the most impressive feats in modern NFL history and one that we all rooted for him immensely. So yeah. Cam is a Super Bowl champion, a Mississippi legend. We'll see what happens in the rest of his football career, but he'll have plenty of opportunities, I think, to continue to leave the legacy of leadership that he desired. And certainly everyone in the fantasy community continues to root for him.
Yeah.
Damn. I'm ready to run through a wall right now. That was fucking intense. He's got that dog. Wish him a speedy recovery. And man, everything you just said was pretty intense. I feel weird like just rolling on and going into player picks, but we have to. The show must roll on, but that was a beautiful write-up, Jacob. Well, for our player picks, if you are just tuning in, you've stuck around this long, we appreciate and love you. What we have, we are a dynasty show, but we like to have this little game. It keeps us kind of accountable on our toes, and it gives us something to kind of go back and forth about, seeing as how I've been in the fucking lead the whole time because I'm the shit. Jacob, you are in last. You are sitting at 382.9. So if you would please, who do you have this week? This is quarterbacks and running backs outside of the top 15, receivers outside of the top 24, and tight ends outside of the top 10.
Yeah, don't play these guys. I suck at this game. But I have Will Levis because he's dope. I have Jahmyr Gibbs because with David Montgomery coming back, even in a high-scoring or at least projected high-scoring game versus the Chargers, the fantasy community as large has dropped them all the way to RB19, which is offensive, preposterous, and rude. Jahan Dotson has been finally doing what I was hoping that he was going to do all season in the last 3 weeks. His 8, 10, 8 targets. We've seen him catch touchdowns, be efficient the last 2 weeks. So excited for him. He goes in a fun game against Seattle that I hope will be kind of a back and forth affair. And then I get to put my least favorite fucking player in the universe in here because as long as T-Bag, as they call him, is starting, this guy just can't stop finding the end zone. So give me Cole Kmet, ranked tight end 11. To catch a couple more TDs from T-Bag.
Oh, my God, T-Bag. Playing the role of Lucas today, who's sitting in second with 390.74 points. Billy is going to take the lead here. Go ahead.
I love this so much because I get to come back. I get to make these picks. I get to put Taylor Heinicke in at quarterback. Just like the good old days, every nice. Single time. Love seeing Taylor Heinicke in there. Look,
wherever he goes in the future, we just need to fade that quarterback because they will get hurt or they get benched. Like, it's just a lock.
Yep, and I'll be there starting him, baby. Taylor Heinicke. At running back, James Cook, easy enough. You know, he's on a good team. Eventually, something has to give. Either he's going to stop getting touches or he's going to have a blow-up game. Marquise Brown, Kyler's coming back. Maybe he's still a little bit limited with the mobility. Hopefully he's leaning more on the arm. You know, Hollywood Brown gets thrown a lot. He's the only target on that offense for the wide receiver position. So you know what? Hollywood Brown, a lot of upside there. And once again, just like the good old days, a random tight end at the back. We got to put Hunter Henry in there. You love to see it, you know. He's had some flashes this season. It's fun to look back on, like, Hunter Henry, the weird career he has. Like
Charger top five dynasty tight end.
Yeah, right. He was phenomenal.
And then he destroyed his leg.
Yeah.
He became, like, a lumberer.
Yeah. I don't want to give it he still had a pretty good career. It feels very similar to Gordon Hayward.
Wow, that's a bummer.
Little basketball trend.
Why would you do that? I'm right here. it gets dark at like 4:30. Like I already have seasonal depression. And you just reminded me of the saddest day of my life.
I was bartending for my friend who was a Celtics fan when that happened, and it was bad. Anyway,
that's the last sporting event that I'll ever PVR because I had a trivia competition that night and I PVR'd the game. I went out to the trivia competition. I spent the whole night like blissfully ignorant of what was happening. I come home, I order a pizza. I turn on the game at like midnight from my PVR. I've been waiting all day for this. Like I was like so excited to watch. I mean, this was supposed to be the Monstars scene. Like it was off Tatum's rookie season, Jaylen's third year. We had Marcus still. We had Kyrie Irving. We had Gordon Hayward. We had Al Horford, Marcus Morris, Terry Rozier. Incredible. And then like literally it happened like 2 minutes into the game. Like it was like immediate. Yeah. It was like the Aaron Rodgers thing where it was like this thing that we had talked about all year for this team wearing green minutes. And then it's like over. And then it happened and I was like, well, fuck this. And then I just like turned off the game and just like cried and like went to sleep. And then from now on I just watch games live because like I will never give myself the humiliation of having like 5 more hours of optimism while everyone else around me knows that I'm eventually going to get depressed when I flip the game on.
That's so funny. I'm so sorry that happened to you. And like on Twitter, we probably lost like 5 listeners as we switched to basketball. True. As you lose followers over on X every time you start tweeting about basketball.
Yeah,
that's true. That's also a really sad story. I'm sorry that happened to you.
I'm more sad it happened to Gordon.
Yeah, fair. Yeah, that's fair. And look, as your weekly points winner currently with 394.62, once again, as the shit, I noticed that you really just kind of tried to counterpunch me at multiple picks here. I'm starting Teabag, assuming Justin Teabag is not playing.
That's I was so bummed to find out that's not his name.
It is Teabag. It is now.
It's Bajent, which sucks.
Yeah, that's
Teabag. I mean, it is his name, but...
Yeah, I'm going to start him. I'm going to assume Justin Fields isn't playing. Like, I'm willing to take that zero. Short week, limited practice today.
Although this is the only game the Bears are incentivized to win all year.
Yeah, and Bajent been like...
Because it literally doesn't matter.
Well, it does matter. Like, they probably want to keep the Panthers down, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And so I'm gonna start Teabag. He's been good. He's rushing. We like that. Then I'm sorry, David Montgomery. He's back. And last time he came back off an injury, they gave him a gajillion touches. At worst, I think he takes the red zone game back from Jahmyr Gibbs. So I'm expecting
those goal line reps. That's for sure.
And because I hate myself, I am going to spite cheer for Amari Cooper as he plays the Ravens. This week,
game's gonna suck. That game's gonna suck so much. That game is gonna have like no points scored.
Deshaun Watson has looked a little bit better, and I think I could PPR my way with Amari Cooper into that 10 to 12 points. And all
I have so much Lamar and Watson in Dynasty, and I'm just chalking up a loss for all those teams. Like, that game's gonna be like 6-3.
It is gonna be disgusting. No, I think Cleveland wins this by like 11 points. Some weird
reverse jinx Bill Simmons.
It'll be that's what I think. I called it earlier in the week. The Ravens got away with beating them because they played an XFL future XFL standout in DTR, the rookie. So yeah, anyway, Amari Cooper, I'm gonna spite cheer for, and I'm gonna take Kyle Pitts here with Tyler Heinicke. Taylor Heinicke, I'm gonna hope for 10 points because again, I'm just trying to maintain and stay ahead of the game. And if Heinicke throws the pits, I get that advantage. And I got to keep a little bit ahead of Lucas. So your champ, or at least leader, is trying to play the strategy game and nickel and dime my way to stay in the lead. Remember, winner.
Play some defense.
Enjoy it. Well, the good thing about the Falcons is that, if Taylor Heinicke scores points, their usage is very predictable. So you know that that'll go to pits. It's definitely not going to go to, like, fucking Kadarius Hodge.
You're right. I could have put Mac Hollins or something in there.
Yeah, you should have picked like Michael Pruitt.
Oh, man. What a great time. Billy, I'm so happy you were able to come on with us.
Yeah.
I know we stretched your time out a little bit more than what you initially had been able to do, but we appreciate that. The listeners appreciate that. Look, I will speak for the guys here and Lucas, who's over across ponds, on a wonderful trip that he deserves. But please come back quick. I'm going to die without you. We have just loved getting this opportunity and being in this position. And we have so much great content on the way. We're going to do running backs next week. We're going to work through the positions and have more of these back and forths on ranks and positions. If there are players you want us to talk about, drop them in the Discord, go hashtag Dynasty Points on Twitter, in the Discord, in DMs, just hashtag Dynasty Points. Leave it in comments of the videos. We'll talk about whatever players you guys want us to. I know you guys are getting used to us. We're getting used to you. We have a lot of content that maybe we covered already on early episodes of Full Tilt. Maybe we'll just end up covering again simply because we didn't cover that for you guys. I know there are some beginners, some vets, some experienced players, some portfolio players, some absolute degens like us. There's a mixed bag here, and we're going to continue to shape our content in the best way that serves all of you because we love this stuff. This is all we do. This is what we talk about. This is what we're into. So we can't wait to keep going. Of course, if you haven't already and you want the links to Jacob's Substack, Thinking About Thinking, that link will be in the description. You should head over there. It is still the only content I read. So I'm not a reading content. It's not how I normally take it in, but I do like the Sunday drive with Jacob. It's great. And you know, I can copy a lot of the shit he says and just regurgitate as if it's my own. Like other smart analysts should do. No, but really. And of course, Billy, man, He's in the Full Tilt Discord as often as he can be. That's also free if you want
to be a lot more there.
Hey man, we appreciate everything you can do, and I really hope you come back, dude. Like, this was such a blast from the past.
You're always welcome here.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I very much want to come back sometimes.
We love that.
Man. Psych, you can't.
Yeah, done, kid. It's over. No. Billy just takes off. Oh man.
It's a welcome back.
Nah, you're out of here. Yeet. Nah, he's gone.
Yeah.
No, but really, for us, for everyone, we really do appreciate everybody popping in.
I couldn't remember how to purely.
Oh, you came back. I thought you were just actually
I was like, is he gonna come back when I do this?
I already gave it an LOL in our private chat.
Yeah. Appreciate you too. This has been a great time. Obviously for Billy the Stone, for Jacob Sanderson, for myself, with Thomas Tipple. Hey, look, everything at Fantasy Points this week is free. Every show.
Oh,
great. Matchup points with Adam Kaplan and John Hansen.
We're like free to see points.
Yeah. Cashing points with Scott Barrett, Graham Barfield, and Jake Tribby. Free. Final points, John Hansen, Tom Brawley, and Graham Barfield. Free. It's all free this week. Everything except for John Proctor's show. That will not be free. That's still subs only. So head to fantasypoints.com. But head over to fantasypoints.com if you're not already. Like the video. Leave a comment. Remember that clear eyes and full hearts can never lose. And your best days, well, goddamn, they're always been tilting. Good night, everybody.